The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. And check out Dr. Oz and Dr. Roizen's website, youbeauty.com. Here are Joe Galewski, Dr. Deb Lonser, and of course, Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
It's the Passionate Radio Show that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. Hour number two. If you missed hour number one, you didn't miss hour number one. RadioMD.com. Go there. We stream live every week at GabRadio.com. To reach Dr. Mike, email questions, udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. Dr. Gary Ginsberg, at 20 minutes after the hour, would you ski on yellow snow? That's an interesting topic that Dr. G wants to talk about today. There's something called side stream smoke exposure. That isn't a good thing. And how about French fries?
Secondhand smoke is what it is.
Side stream smoke is secondhand smoke?
Yeah, and we're going to find out what it's really. It's associated with a very high increase of a problem you don't want, and there's a way of avoiding it. So we'll talk about to him about that.
Anything that has to do with smoke is a problem you don't want, right? So, but they're adding up day by day. And how about French fries during pregnancy? Dr. Gary Ginsberg at 20 after the hour, at 34 past the hour. It's Straight Talk from the Docs, Dr. Mike and Dr. Arthur Perry. What are you talking about today?
I don't know. Arthur normally sets the topics, and we debate that back and forth. And unless my email has gone dead, which it hasn't, it doesn't appear to it, he hasn't sent me the topics. He normally sends them 3 or 4 hours in advance, and we debate them, and that he wants to go over, and I can't debate him. So worst comes to worst, we're going to do a bunch of the top stories of the week if he doesn't show.
Okay. That'll be at hopefully 34 past the hour, and another Real Age Tip of the Week. There are two because this is a two-hour show. The number one medical news story of the week has to do with Americans under the age of 50. And if that's you, there are some stark findings on health that Dr. Mike is going to talk about here.
Yeah, this is one that we are dying. Americans are dying before the age of 50. And, Joe, do you know what we're dying of?
Before 50?
Yeah. In other words, young Americans die earlier and live in poor health than their counterparts in every other developed country, with far higher rates of death from?
Well, I would say diabetes.
Guns, car accidents,
oh my,
drug addiction, and yes, diabetes. In men, deaths before age 50 account for 2/3 of the difference in life expectancy, and in women, 1/3. And the analysis included Canada, Japan, Australia, France, Germany, Spain, and the U.S. So we have a higher rate. You might expect we have a higher rate of gun deaths. Do you know how many gun deaths we have? This is amazing to me. I didn't realize it was any place near this high. How many we have in the under 50 population every year?
No, I don't know the number. It's high, though, right?
It's 9,000. And you know how many they have in, for example, Canada? Now you've got to multiply by 10 to get the same rate, but they had 117.
Why is that?
So
why?
It would be 1,117 in Canada versus 9,000. Well, it's a different, you know, I don't think they allow assault weapons. I don't think they allow handguns. They want gun permits for guns that shoot animals, not that shoot humans.
Well, they're saying now with all the, shootings that we're going through now, that this problem, violence is a three-legged stool. It's and you've got to address them all, and I really think you do. The gun violence, obviously, gun control, the issue of violence in our media, and civil institutions. You know, how to best deal with mental health problems. I think to address this problem, it's that three-legged stool. You've got to talk about all three. Put everything on the table, as far as I'm concerned. My opinion there.
Yeah, I think I don't disagree with that, but just to give you the – so from this standpoint, what happens is in addition to this, we have much higher rates of chronic disease such as diabetes, why this is stark finding is it means that our health care costs will continue to go up until we address this. And you and I often talk on this,
right,
Joe,
yep,
that one of the ways, if we don't get control of tobacco, if we don't get control of obesity, if we don't teach people to manage stress, and if we don't take individual responsibility for this, to push this on the United States, to push it on our government costs, means that our budget will be busted, and it will be very hard for us to have as civil a society as we even have now, because so much of the money will be spent on medical care, and those of us in medicine don't want it. The other thing that was interesting is we have 20 times the car accidents of the average, or car deaths of the average of the other countries, and I don't understand that one at all.
Remember how unsafe cars used to be before the padded dashboards and everything, and no seat belts in the old cars, and the dashboards were metal, and now they're much, much safer than they are, or they were before. It's just interesting how unsafe those cars used to be before, and I'm not sure if the accidents are probably more now. Of course, they go faster, obviously, have more horsepower, and there's a feeling of invincibility, I think, with a lot of people in these vehicles, SUVs, because they're built safer, people seem to think they have a little more leeway in driving, and that relates to higher accidents. Guns, obviously, guns, violence, and those kind of things are all part of the problem. A story I read a couple of weeks ago said that you talked about obesity as it relates to diabetes. Obesity now is a bigger world health problem than hunger. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. In other words, if you will, for all of our time, because of the hunger in the underdeveloped countries and the developing countries, hunger was the leading cause of death, and malnutrition was, and now obesity has overtaken hunger, that is, has overtaken malnutrition as a cause of death. We still have malnutrition in some areas, but we now have so many deaths from obesity and the complications of obesity that we've gotten higher.
Yep, that was amazing to me when I read that. This is, I think, the fun news, a medical news story of the week. And I talked to an app developer on my show here in Syracuse, New York, yesterday about this. It's about a new app that apparently through this new app you can maybe find out who made you sick, who gave you the flu with this new app. This is kind of interesting.
Well, why don't you tell about the story since you've got better information about it since you talked to the app developer?
Well, on Facebook, I talked to an app developer, but apparently on Facebook you can put, it doesn't tell you who gave you the flu, but it can, based on clues, you come up with clues based on some of who you talked with or who some of your friends are who may tip you off. Well, I'm not feeling well today. I've got a fever. I stayed home from work, and you put these clues together. Now, these are friends, obviously. You have Facebook friends that you don't come in direct contact with, but there are those who you do, your real friends, who you do have day-to-day contact with. And if you see these people and they're indicating to you on Facebook through this app that they're not feeling well, maybe if you've had a relationship, a personal relationship with them over the past week or two, maybe they're one of the people who can who given you the illness, or who gave you the flu. I'm not sure what the point of it is after that. Can you exact revenge on somebody or something? I'm not really sure about that, but it's just interesting how you can go about kind of figuring out, based on what people say on their Facebook pages, who may have given what to whom. It's a new app through Facebook. So finally, Facebook is finally worth something for a change, I think. All right, coming up next is Dr. Gary Ginsberg, What's Toxic and What's Not, on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Stay with us, and thanks for listening here today. Back with Dr. G after the timeout.
Fresh Healthy Vending, the most successful healthy vending machine business in the nation, is now seeking franchise partners. For the first time in your community, Fresh Healthy Vending is looking to launch its highly successful, profitable, and innovative vending concept. Here's how it works. Own your own route of bright, colorful, high-tech, healthy vending machines that offer a range of natural, organic, and healthy snacks and drinks. Yogurts, fresh fruit, juices, smoothies, fruit cups, iced tea, and more. Over 500 healthy products to choose from. These machines will be placed for you by Fresh's professional team of location specialists. Your machines will be making money in schools, businesses, retailers, hospitals, and other profitable locations throughout your community. Securing the most profitable locations for our franchise partners is Fresh Healthy Vending's number one goal. Own your own money-making vending business opportunity. Minimum investment, $80,000. Go to FreshVending.com for the full story. That's FreshVending.com. FreshVending.com.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness,
it's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only 1 in 5 girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now,
the words you say to her today,
can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together, we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. October 8th through the 14th is National Fire Prevention Week, a great time to brush up on fire safety skills. We've all heard of stop, drop, and roll, but there's also the first up, last out rule. This method was developed after studies revealed that children don't always wake up when a fire alarm sounds. Even if they do, they're often disoriented and confused by the noise and commotion. Under these circumstances, children may decide it's safer to hide under the bed or in a closet than venture out into the darkness and smoke. First up, last out aims to avoid that situation. When a smoke alarm goes off, the first person up, usually an adult, is responsible for finding and ushering everyone out of the house. So while a working smoke detector more than doubles your chance of surviving a fire, it is also important to ensure that no one gets left behind. And for more information on children's health and safety, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with Joe Galewski and Dr. Deb Lonser, and starring Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, brought to you by YouBeauty.com and Morning and Night Multivitamins. Dr. Arthur Perry will check in at 34 past the hour with Straight Talk from the Docs. We reserve this time of the show every week for Dr. Gary Ginsberg, our toxicologist. Hey, what's toxic, what's not? Hey, Dr. G, don't eat the yellow snow.
No, I wouldn't. I'm not even talking about eating it. I'm talking about what you ski on it.
You remember that when we were kids, though? Don't eat the yellow snow, right?
Right. Well, this is also just don't eat it, and also should you ski on it is a question. Because this Arizona ski resort, where water is a little bit more precious out west, this Arizona ski resort decided to apply for using sewage plant effluent, and the state of Arizona gave them permission to do that, to pump that up into the mountain and make snow out of basically treated sewage. And when it came, they got the permissions, the studies were done, and then when it came out of the jets, it was yellow. They've got an accumulation now of yellow snow up on this mountain in Arizona where people are supposed to be downhill skiing. I mean, talk about an ick factor.
Oh, and what do you do if you fall in it?
Yeah,
I wonder, how good was this? Like, how good was the treatment?
Yeah, well, we know the bacterial level coming out of sewage plants is under control to a degree, but it's not zero. It's not, you know, what you would want to be drinking, obviously, or getting all covered all over your body. So an interesting decision. They didn't think it was going to come out yellow. And the fact that it is yellow really has a lot of head scratching.
Have they stopped? Have they stopped doing it?
Well, it's on the ground. What are you going to do? Like put red dye in the next batch and cover it with red? I don't know.
Yeah. Awful.
Well, couldn't you cover it with white in the next batch?
Yeah, but if it's white, then it's just going to be yellow again if they get it from the same place.
Crazy. Now, Dr. Mike wants to make hit on the global mercury emission story, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, we being the United States, Canada, Mexico, we had a North American treaty to cut down on global emissions from our products, from our waste, and we have seen in the environment levels of mercury in fish and in sediment going down over the last 30, 40 years because of some of these agreements reached in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Well, now the trend is going in the opposite direction, and mercury emissions are going up from two factors. One is people are burning, third world countries in China are burning a lot of coal. It's cheap, it's local, and so they're mining coal, they're burning coal. Coal has fairly high levels of mercury. So the global mercury cycle is now increasing from coal production as well as gold. And now what does mercury have to do with the price of gold? Actually quite a lot, because with increasing gold prices, there's much more gold mining. And the way that these little local mom-and-pop shops are getting gold out of rivers in places like Africa is through mercury. Mercury binds up the gold in the silt, and it actually then you could purify the gold back out by burning off the mercury. And so there's airborne mercury emissions.
You got too complex for me, Gary.
Okay.
So
anyway, the chemistry
mercury binds the gold, and that's how you get the gold.
Right.
Then so it's some separation, must be
right.
Some furnace process that
right.
Separates the gold from the mercury, and you inhale the mercury.
Right. Well, the mercury goes up into the atmosphere and adds to the global burden of mercury, which ends up in our fish. So in terms of understanding whether the future we're going to have more fish advisories, if we're going to have to worried about different kinds of fish that are now okay, maybe the only thing that would be safe to eat in a worst-case scenario would be farmed fish, and even they would be more – so, you know, if things keep heading in the direction that they are, mercury in fish is going to become a bigger problem.
How do we avoid that?
Well, interestingly enough, the Environmental Protection Agency has gone overseas because this type of mercury production is not happening in the United States, and EPA has developed a method to capture the mercury and recycle it and making these gold operations pricier. But if we could convince these local mom-and-pop small producers to switch over to the EPA method, I've seen statistics, they could capture 80% or more of the mercury. So that's something that these other governments...
So our prediction is, if you will, Gary, is that mercury, if you will, toxicity, which is a neurologic problem, both peripheral, not feeling, sensing as well, not having as fine motor skills, and the mental fog that mercury gives is going to become more common. Is that likely to, in other words, is that prediction likely to be met, and what do we do to protect ourselves? Because we can't, you know, not avoid breathing. So do we keep breathing and just avoid fish that have, monitor the fish closely so we don't have fish with mercury in them? How do we do this?
Yeah, exactly. If this trend continues and we see mercury levels rising in fish, it's going to be really important for state governments, federal government, FDA, to sample, be really diligent in sampling a lot of fish, monitoring the trends, and finding out which species are the cleanest and still have omega-3s. So it's that whole risk-benefit ratio. And higher mercury levels means more risk. So it's going to need more vigilance, more testing, and more advisories. The whole idea with controlling mercury emissions in the global cycle is that we've been able to relax some of the mercury fish advisories in recent years. But that seems to be not the future direction. Anyway, let's not be pessimistic, and let's believe that some of these controls can go into place.
All right, Gary, in 2 minutes before the break, talk about the story about secondhand smoke exposure, what it might do now.
Yes, exactly. Well, the information about secondhand smoke increasing respiratory problems and increasing heart disease when you're exposed chronically, that we've known that literature. It's a very believable literature. Now, what is a bit surprising is that people who are around smokers and are breathing in that secondhand smoke, they have a higher rate of dementia, and they were never smokers themselves. And getting Alzheimer's and senile dementia is the causes for that have been sought for many years, and this could be the first clear environmental link to dementia. And the problem is that there's so many different ingredients in smoke. It could be the nicotine, and in fact, cigarette smoke makes Parkinson's disease better. Smokers have a lower rate of Parkinson's disease, and so we know there's something nervous system oriented, neurological, that cigarette smoke is doing, and it looks like it is increasing the odds of Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and another reason to stay away from it. Smokers get it, and even the sidestream smokers get the increased risk of dementia.
Okay. You can fit this one in very quickly. French fries during pregnancy, would you recommend it or not?
Well, the obvious concern people may think is that not only would mom grow too much weight, but so would the infant, and you'd end up with a newborn that was obese from the French fries.
Oh.
That's not going to happen. But I wouldn't follow that craving because it may lead to your obesity later in life from the baby having a different set point when it was born to gain more weight later. New data is out showing a connection between French fries and specifically a chemical in French fries, acrylamide, and a lower birth weight in
babies. All right. Leave it there. Dr. Gary Ginsberg, whatstoxic.com. This is more than interesting website. Straight Talk from the Docs coming up. Dr. Arthur Perry and Dr. Mike Roizen here on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. With Dr. Mike Roizen, don't forget the Real Age Tip of the Week, hour number 2, come up in about 20 minutes.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Tour de Cure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Tour to Cure. Yeah. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. The U.S. is experiencing an increase in the number of cases of whooping cough. This is a serious illness caused by pertussis bacteria. It often starts with what seems like a common cold. Then, especially for toddlers, the cough worsens and leads to the characteristic whoop sound on inhaling. During this phase of the illness, which usually lasts more than 2 weeks, the child can get short of breath and the skin around the mouth may turn blue. Older children may cough so hard they vomit. The illness can be particularly deadly for infants who can develop complications such as pneumonia and seizures. Whooping cough is highly contagious and can spread to children who have not been vaccinated. The best way to prevent this dangerous illness is to be sure your child received all doses of the pertussis vaccine. This is usually given as the DTaP vaccine. And for more information on preventing whooping cough, visit www.cisp.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
It's one thing to have a job in this economy, but it's another to have a career that you love. Getting the skills for today's careers may depend on your college degree. So if you're interested in the future of business, electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, call ITT Technical Institute today. With over 100 campuses nationally, ITT Tech can prepare you for a career in one of these fields. After all, tens of thousands of ITT Tech grads have built a solid future. Perhaps they can do the same for you. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. So what's stopping you? For more information and to schedule your campus tour, call ITT Tech toll-free at 800-574-1319. That's 800-574-1319. ITT Technical Institute, education for the future. 800-574-1319.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
And now back to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. And now joining Drs. Roizen and Lonzer is renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Arthur Perry.
Arthur! Tell me about pain. Tell me about pain and skin cancers.
You know, it sounds funny.
Skin cancers had pain.
Isn't that true? That's what we've been taught from the days way back before World War II when you and I went to medical school.
Well, you may be that old, but I'm a little younger than that.
Yeah, Mike. No, I'm not that old. But certainly one of the things we were taught in medical school and in residency and in practice is that skin cancers do not hurt. And so, in fact, that was sort of one of the ways to distinguish between a thing on the skin that might be painful and a skin cancer, you know, like a pimple. A pimple hurts, right? But a skin cancer should not hurt. That's what we were told. That might not be true, Mike, because there was a study that was just published in a journal called the Archives of Dermatology, which is a very good dermatology journal. And they looked at about 500 people with skin cancers that were not melanomas, so not the pigmented things. These were basal cell carcinomas or squamous cell carcinomas. And it turns out that 40% of squamous cell carcinomas hurt. So people had complaints of pain. They said, there's this thing on my arm or my ear that hurts. Now, that's opposed to about 18% of people with basal cell carcinomas. So this is very interesting. It seems like a silly little thing, but it's sort of a landmark in dermatology, because we're now going to look for skin cancers when people say this thing on their skin hurts. And it's more likely to be a squamous cell carcinoma than a basal cell. Of course, they're treated just about the same way. They're removed. And almost always, Mike, those are the two skin cancers that will not hurt you in the long run, as long as you take care of these. And that means don't let them get to the point where, do you remember what the basal cell carcinoma was called when it got to the point where it was the size of like a baseball on someone's scalp? Do you remember that term?
No.
That was the rodent ulcer. Remember that from pathology when you were just
a
kid?
No, I don't remember that, but I'm sure I was grossed out by it.
Yeah, it was, because that's the vision of someone falling asleep in a drunken stupor, in an alley, and a rat gnawing away on their scalp, a rodent ulcer. Oh,
Arthur,
terrible,
Arthur.
Terrible.
I can't take it anymore.
He's going to censor me. We're going to have the 7-second delay. So, but that's what a neglected skin cancer looks like. And every now and then we do see those, even today, Mike, because people tend to ignore these things. But basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas are uniformly cured by some very simple things, like either freezing them off or excising, cutting them out, or using one of those things like Effudex. One of those creams that you can put on. So very, very easily cured.
So you much there, better that way.
You fell off the chair, didn't you? You did. You didn't like that description.
I did not like that
carcinoma.
Description. Okay, so
I'm sorry.
If it's painful, doesn't necessarily mean it isn't a cancer for the skin.
That's right.
That's
right.
The basic message. And is melanoma
that's
painful?
That's the take-home. Usually not. Nope.
So usually skin cancers are not painful.
That's correct. And even when the lymph nodes are involved, not painful. So, and that's the difference. If someone has nodules in the neck and they hurt, that's usually from an infection. You know, if you can feel lymph nodes in the neck, that's usually a sore throat or some other type of infection, as opposed to a cancer. If they're not painful, that's more worrisome.
Now, better story from a standpoint of more fun is spa treatments. What should you not get in a spa? What can you get? And why is there an outbreak of acne after getting a facial?
You know, spa procedures are a billion-dollar business now. I mean, there are spas everywhere. You just have to look in every mall, every strip mall. There's a spa or a salon, and you know what's
and
the difference
obviously,
between a spa and salon?
Well, how are they regulated?
Well, they're regulated by cosmetology boards, not by medical boards.
Well, no. But I mean, are they regulated by the State Department of Health or something?
Each state differs. Some it's out of the Department of Health, and some it's Consumer Affairs. So, for instance, New Jersey, that I'm very familiar with, its Consumer Affairs Division regulates spas. That's the cosmetologists. As opposed to, I believe, New York, it is the Department of Health. So it really depends on the artificial boundaries that the state sets up. But, Mike, these spas frequently perform facials, right? You might have had one. Lots of people do. They're very, very common, and they're mystical procedures. You know, if you've ever watched an esthetician doing a facial, it almost seems like there's either mysticism or science. I'm not sure there's either involved. It's a sort of an individualized performance where usually a woman, but sometimes a man, will put all sorts of different chemicals on the skin, you know, open the pores and then close the pores and massage the skin. And they also will unroof acne, although that's illegal in most states, although they still do that. They're not allowed to use lancets to penetrate the skin, but still that's a very commonly done thing. So that's a facial, and you think of it as a nice, relaxing thing. Women go all the time, and they enjoy facials. But it turns out that if you look at the data of a facial, within 2 weeks of a facial, a third of women get acne breakouts, which is
very
interesting.
Come on, a third?
A full
third.
Not a
third. One out of every three?
30? That's correct.
No, it can't be.
And no, it's
why
it's
would
true.
They go back
and,
for and, more?
Well, they do. They do. It's relaxing.
Do they? Is you it know, maybe they don't associate the problem with it?
That's probably correct. Probably correct because it's not instant. It's not. You know, we only associate things that are instant. You know, that day or maybe the next day occur, but 2 weeks later. We don't think so much about that, well, wait a minute, maybe it was that thing we had a few weeks ago that caused it. You know, think about the bruises that you find on your legs and think back, you know, when did you get this thing? Because the bruise doesn't come up for several days. It's the same sort of thing. So a third of people get these acne breakouts, and probably the reason is there's an irritation that occurs with a facial. There's some degree of exfoliation. Exfoliation means getting rid of the dead cells on the surface of the skin. And what that does, it allows better penetration of things. And things could cause allergic reactions, or it could cause contact dermatitis. So if you count up the number of chemicals that women's faces are exposed to during a facial, it's in the many hundreds, Mike, many hundreds. So it's not like a couple dozen chemicals. It's hundreds. And the chance of not having an allergic reaction or contact dermatitis to one of those hundreds is 2 out of 3. That's how it works. That's why, you know, 1 out of 3 women gets a contact dermatitis and develops a reaction like acne. And the reason it's acne is because one of the defenses of our body to these toxins, to this contact dermatitis, is to make more oil. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm not a big fan of facials for that reason. I think microdermabrasion is a much better way to go. We could talk about that maybe after the break.
So microdermabrasion we'll hear about it, but I saw an article where guys get microdermabrasion every time they shave every day.
To a certain extent, that's correct. That's correct. But there's more to it than that. So that's our teaser.
Now, what things you shouldn't have in a spa, we're going to discuss in the next half hour, in the next 10 minutes after we come back from the break, as well as a tip of the week on gluten foods and going gluten-free. So when we come back, Arthur, what things you shouldn't get in a spa, as well as what microdermabrasion really constitutes, and a real age tip of the week. We'll be right back.
Great Start Life Insurance, offered by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, ensures the insurability of your child. Now, what does that mean? Well, too often people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards precludes them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. By insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your child, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out about the rates and all the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to greatstartgtl.com, enter the station's call letters, and as a thank you for applying, we'll give you a free non-insurance prescription discount card, good for substantial savings on prescriptions and other medical tests. Keep and use the discount card even if you should cancel your Great Start Juvenile Life Insurance policy. The free discount card is not insurance, and discounts are available only at participating pharmacies. The discount medical plan organization providing this discount card is Vantage America Solutions, Inc. Ensure the insurability of your child and check out the Great Start Plan. Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois. Peace of mind. Now at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com.
Downsized, outsourced, pink slipped? Afraid of losing your home? Forbes magazine named our company one of the top 10 business ideas of 2012, where ordinary people are creating extraordinary incomes.
Hi, I am Elena from Miami. I was a traditional business owner with all the headaches that come with that. But I replaced that multiple franchise income working from home full time, and I spend all the time I want with my son.
Get out of the rat race. Work from home and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Hi, David from Boston. I was in the real estate industry industry for 12 years when the bottom completely fell out of that business. I really had my back against the wall with five young kids depending on me. I've now been in this business for less than a full year, and I'm actually better off today, income-wise, than I was in my best year ever in real estate.
Go to OneOccupyWealth.com now and change your life today. That's the number OneOccupyWealth.com. OneOccupyWealth.com. Start earning great money as soon as next week.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes, March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours. All of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Kids often test parental limits and rules, and sometimes parents decide enough is enough. That's when a timeout may be effective. Timeouts stop children from getting attention after they misbehave. Timeouts work best for children between the ages of 2 and 5, but can be effective for kids as old as 10 in some cases. A rule of thumb is 1 minute of timeout for every year of your child's age. For example, a 4-year-old would get a 4-minute timeout. Some guidelines for a timeout. Give the timeout immediately after the unacceptable behavior so your child knows why she's being disciplined. Explain clearly why the behavior was unacceptable. Calmly place your child in a quiet, boring, but secure place. If she gets up, quietly explain that her timeout isn't over and return her to her seat. When it is over, wipe the slate clean and remember to praise your child each time and every time she shows the acceptable behaviors. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
And now back to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here are the You Docs, Dr. Michael Roizen and Dr. Arthur Perry.
So, Arthur, what procedures are bad in spas versus what procedures should we definitely have in a spa?
Well, Mike, before I get hate mail from every esthetician in the country, I do want to say that, in the study I talked about with getting acne reactions after facials, there were 140 or so women in that study. And, the women said 60% of them were happy. And they said their face felt fresh and rejuvenated and supple in half of people. So there are certainly some benefits, but, you just have to be careful. Now, Mike, have you ever had, are you ready for this? Have you
Yes.
ever had, okay, here's the word now. It's called balneotherapy. Do you know what balneotherapy is?
No.
I'm going to teach Dr. Mike Roizen something. Okay, balneotherapy. That is bathing in warm mineral soaks, mineral water.
Oh, yes, I have.
That's the official name. There you go. Have you jumped right into that hot water?
I don't know if you'd say I jumped right into it, but I have gone into it.
Well, don't. Well, in Turkey, last year, there were three deaths in older people. Now they define older. Boy, this is terrible. One of the people was 63 years old. I don't consider that old. And two were above 65. They didn't specify the names. Three people got into the water and died of sudden cardiac arrest. So now these are fairly hot. I don't know the exact temperature, but they're fairly hot mineral baths. And it's a common spa treatment. So the lesson from that study is if you've got coronary artery disease, you might think twice before you jump into one of these hot baths. It might not be the best thing for you. So that's another one to be careful of in spas. So we're being careful with our facials. Now, how about massage? Massage in a spa. You've had those, but we don't want to tell your wife. You've had those, right?
I have had them, and I don't care. You can tell my wife.
I'm just kidding you, Mike.
So, well, I'm not even kidding.
No, I know. Now, now, massages, those actually, there's no bad things. So everybody's waiting for me to say, well, a massage is a terrible thing. Actually, in most studies, massages have been shown to decrease blood pressure in a good way. And repeated massages over the course of 12 weeks significantly lower blood pressure. So that's a good thing. Nothing bad to say about massage. So,
well, it doesn't sound like you're saying anything bad.
No, nothing bad about massage. I am saying bad things about facials and better things about microdermabrasion. That's what we talked about before. Now, microdermabrasion, different from dermabrasion, it's a sanding down of the skin. It's an exfoliation technique. So it gets rid of the dead cells on the surface of the skin. And it's done, it started out about 15 years ago by blowing aluminum oxide crystals on the skin, which is sandblasting, right? That's what it is.
Yep, that's sandblasting.
Blew them on the skin.
That's exactly sandblasting.
And that's what microdermabrasion started out as. And most of us don't want to breathe in those aluminum oxide crystals. So now it's more like little diamond crystals embedded into a handpiece. But the exfoliation is only one part of it. You mentioned that before, that men, they get microdermabrasion every time they shave, sort of, because the other half of microdermabrasion is suctioning. So suctioning the pores, getting the dirt out of the pores. And if you think about what a facial is supposed to do, it's supposed to really clean the skin. Microdermabrasion does it in a pure way. So it exfoliates, it gets rid of the dead cells on the surface of the skin and thereby making the skin feel and look smoother. And microdermabrasion also then suctions out the dirt. So that's a good procedure. It works. It decreases acne by virtue of keeping the skin
clean. Now, how does it suck out the dirt?
There's a vacuum. There's a vacuum, and it's a little... And if you overdo it, you look like you've had little tiny hickeys on your face. So we don't want that. But it sucks out
little tiny
the dirt. And the
you know, Arthur, we're running out. Actually, I'm going to do the Real Age Tip of the Week now. So I hope you don't mind if I interrupt you with the Real Age Tip of the Week.
Now on You, the Owner's Manual, this is the Real Age Tip of the Week with Michael Roizen, M.D.
And this is no wheat this, gluten-free that. What's the deal with gluten-free diets and celiac disease? Celiac disease is a politically unbiased autoimmune disease. Seems both Chelsea Clinton and Elizabeth Hasselbeck, that's a Democrat and a Republican, have it, and can't stomach the same things. Foods that contain gluten, such as wheat, rye, barley, some oats, and many prepared foods are off their menus. They're not alone. Celiac disease is 40 times more common than docs used to think, affecting as many as 1 in 133 of us in North America. If your parents, siblings, or kids have it, there's a 1 in 22 chance you do too. So celiac disease is underdiagnosed and millions are at risk of complications such as gastroesophageal reflux disease, that burning in your esophagus that you feel in your neck and sometimes you wake up with, and osteoporosis, that's weakened bones in adults, and anemia, abdominal pain, growth deficiencies in children, not to mention epilepsy and irregular heartbeats. Celiac disease damages tiny villi in the small intestine, which normally shuttle nutrients from food into the bloodstream. When they can't, you get nutritional deficiencies, diarrhea, cramping, vomiting, weight loss, even skin rashes. But gluten intolerance is something different. Gluten intolerance means you can't tolerate it, you get an allergy to it, rather than, or you get a dislike of it rather than celiac disease. So what do you do if you question it? Talk to your doc about blood tests for gluten autoantibodies. They're easily obtained in a blood test, but if they're positive, you still need other tests to confirm the diagnosis, such as a biopsy. If you're diagnosed with celiac disease or gluten sensitivity, then you eliminate gluten from your diet and other gluten-hiding substances, even makeup and beer. And you get your folate levels tested because supplements are essential to healing. You can still eat whole grains, and we encourage you to. You've just got to choose whole grains that are gluten-free, such as chia, corn, rice, and sorghum. You'll feel better with gluten-free advantage, and you'll make your real age much younger. So what are the foods to obtain if you want to go? What are the basic foods to avoid if you want to go gluten-free? Wheat, rye, barley, some oats, and any foods prepared with any of those things. And that's the Real Age Tip of the Week. Arthur, thank you for being here. Sonar, thank you for great engineering. Joe Galuski, and especially you for listening to us on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. We'll be back next week with a top five medical stories of the week. Remember, start protecting yourself from mercury. It's going to get more common.